Macmillan Audio presents Victory at Yorktown by Newt Gingrich and William R. Fortune. Read for you by William Dufresne.
Part 1. Major André. Upstate New York. September 30 through October 1, 1780. Prologue. Headquarters of the Continental Army near West Point on the Hudson, New York. September 30, 1780. 8 p.m. Darkness blanketed the Hudson River Valley. The glow of hundreds of campfires reflecting off the low scudding clouds, passing in the wake of this afternoon's rain. He left the window open to admit the fresh evening breeze, even though if Martha were here, she would slam it shut, cautioning him about the danger of chills and fever borne on such a breeze. It was a strange, silly notion. As a young man, he had spent years out on the edge of the frontier, either campaigning in the last war or surveying after the conflict had ended. He would go for months at a time, with only a bit of canvas over his head. But once back in the house where Martha held sway, and even on the most sweltering of nights, she held religiously to the belief that night air coming in through an open window was dangerous. Of course, he indulged her. There were some things that even though he was commander-in-chief of all American forces in the field, he nevertheless deferred to his wife, and usually did so gladly. He wished for her presence this evening with a deep longing. Whenever presented with what he felt was not a military question, but instead a moral decision, it was her advice he always turned to. The decision he had just made, the paper he was about to sign, were indeed a military decision. That was, and would always be, how he defined it. And yet it was, as well, a moral question, forced upon him by this never-ending war. General George Washington stood up, stretching, his towering 6-foot-2 height nearly brushing the low beams overhead. Opening the door to his office, he stepped out, the guards flanking it, snapping to attention. Alexander Hamilton, busy at work in his office across the hallway with the door open, looked up, ready to be summoned. Washington shook his head and gestured for him to remain at ease, then headed for the front door, opened it, and stepped out into the night, the guards posted outside coming to attention as well. Hands characteristically clasped behind his back, he started into the night. He had barely taken a dozen paces and then heard footsteps trailing behind him. A bit annoyed, Washington turned to see Hamilton racing to catch up, half a dozen guards following.
"Alexander," he sighed, "I'm just going for a walk."
"Sir, after the events of the last week, I must insist that a guard accompany you at all times. One cannot be too cautious." It was obvious Hamilton was filled with concern for his well-being, at times too much so. But he knew the young man to be right. After the events of the last week,
"All right then, Colonel Hamilton,"
he sighed and looked at his guard detail.
"But no need to hem me in, young sir. Indulge me by just following along at a decent interval."
The men, encamped near his headquarters, having finished their evening meal of salt pork and whatever they could forage on the sly, or barter for from nearby farms, were settling down for the night. He did not enter the encampment area. That would simply trigger all the usual calls to attention, rousting men out, with nervous young officers trying to put on a show of having their men properly attired and lined up to present arms. When serving with the British during Braddock's disastrous campaign back at the start of the French and Indian War, he had endured such foolery off.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?